Abolition today.
Американская фирма Transceptor Technology приступила к производству компьютеров «Персональный спутник».
Our members to a fairly well. You've had no defections from the Republican right to trouble you. Well, as to what you promised, where the hell are the commissioners?
You lied to me, Mr. Lincoln. You evaded my request for a denial that there is a Confederate peace offer because there is one. We are absolutely guaranteed to lose the whole thing.
And we don't need a goddamn abolition amendment.
Leave the Constitution alone.
The peace commission is right here today.
I can't listen to this anymore. I can't accomplish a goddamn thing of any human meaning or worth until we cure ourselves of slavery and end this pestilential war. If any of you or anyone else knows it, I know I need this. This amendment is that cure. We're stepped out upon the world stage now. Now! Fate of human dignity in our hands. Blood's been spilled to afford us this moment. Now, now, now. And you grousel and heckle and dodge about like pettifogging Tammany Hall hucksters. See what is before you. See the here and now. That's the hardest thing. The only thing that accounts. Abolishing slavery by constitutional provision settles the fate for all coming time, not only of the millions now in bondage, but of unborn millions to come. Two votes stand in its way. These votes must be procured.
We need two yeses. Three abstentions. Four yeses, and one more abstention, and the amendment will pass.
You got a night and a day and a night. Several perfectly good hours. Now get the hell out of here, kid.
Yes. But how?
Those are Scots, man. I am the President of the United States of America, clothed in immense power. You will procure me these votes.
The year is 2020, the number. Another summer, get down. Down to the funky drummer. Music ain't in the heart, cause I know you got soul.
The information they got them seeing what's really wrong with these racist days. I honor the strong and pity the weak. Your thoughts run your life, be careful what you think. Haiti beat France in century 17. Salute Toussaint and Dessalines. And I do love France, know what I mean? It's a system I'm talking, nobody's agreeing. They say it's suicide when dead bodies are swinging. Cowards are hunting black men, that's what I'm seeing. How many toasters have been burnt down? And once Central Park was a thriving black town. Yo, Chuck, I'm fighting the power right now. Thanks to you, Flav and P.E. putting it down. Putting your life on the line so I can rap now. The next generation still singing Fight the Power.
Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Policing they ways, ignite over the law. Yeah. Wanna give a short stick, but we really need a long. To the boys in the hood, ducking bullets and batons. From boys in the hood, triple K, honey arms. Four fingers on my palm, screaming fight. Fight. Change the policy, defund, buy back our property. Yeah. You love Black Panther, but not Fred Hampton. No. Word to the Howards and the Aggies and the Hamptons. Yeah. They book us, won't book us, I'm booker. P. Washington, George Kilmore, 20. Think about it, that's 2,000 pennies. Yeah. The value black life, the cost of going to Wendy's for a four-quarter burger. Ended in murder. Fight for Brianna and the pain of her mama. Gotta fight
the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
long we've been at war. The revolution on all platforms. You break a man's mind in his back, your solidarity is what I'm wearing all black for. For comrades who don't fought without me, it's not to try and change our thoughts about me or to redirect your reports about me. Dear white people, you should take a course about me. Cause is it the long ding-a-ling, four-finger ring? The sciences of the arts, the songs we can sing? I really wanna know why y'all so scared. Probably cause the promised land, we almost there. But look, I think of images that fuel my youth. Interviews by Craig Hodges and Abdul Raouf. Examples like Olympic black power salutes to Panther truth. I saw as I pursued my truth. If racism is the cancer, black thoughts the answer. Gotta get up off the back porch. Emancipate your mind, get your body back from ransom.
Come on!
And all black hands up for the anthem.
Yo, check this out, man.
Bring that beat back,
bring
man.
Bring that beat back.
Three, two.
People stronger than this evil, smashing your power structure, melanin royal regal, system designed to kill and unprotect, worldwide hit the streets just to get some respect, our fight and our right for freedom will never waver, justice Breonna Taylor, salute Chuck and Flavor, still the same anger since Radio Raheem died, black power to the people, push forward pride.
Fight the power like it's an Octo, born to fight, I made it off the block though, thought he had a gun and he was black, that's the combo, the police killed George having a convo, they killed Malcolm X, they killed Dr. King, they gave us guns and dope, they wanna stop a king, trying to erase my history, stop and think, history class ain't tell us about Juneteenth, stop and give a damn about a Negro, pull a trigger, kill a Negro, he's a key, bro, fuck living life on welfare, the last one who cared was Obamacare, round 12, nose kinda bloody, gotta keep fighting, Trump through the North Korea, they respect violence. If you ain't trying to have your city on fire, put some respect on our name. We come from gold and diamonds.
Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. We got to fight the power that be. Elvis was a hero the most, but he never meant shit to me. You see, straight up racist and sucker was simply plain.
Motherfucking in job, Wayne.
Cause I'm black and I'm proud. I'm ready. I'm hype for some amp. Most of my heroes don't appear in those stamps. You looking by nothing but rating for 400 years if you check.
Don't worry, be happy.
Was the number one jam. Jam if I stand, you can slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on. Come on. What we got to say?
Yeah.
Power to the people, know the lay. Make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be.
Abolition.
Abolition.
Today.
You had me muted. All right, there you go. Once
things
again.
Things happen.
Yeah, exactly. Things happen. And it's happening like that because for the first time, I am not broadcasting live from the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center in Sumter, South Carolina. We are here in the capital of California, Sacramento, right now, broadcasting live with our guests here in the studio, which is outside.
Absolutely. So that's great. We're in live from the ACA3 land of Sacramento, California. You're going to hear all kinds of feedback. You're going to hear all kinds of stuff because truth happens, but we're going to make this show as funky as it usually is.
Mm-hmm.
So also, one day after the National March for Our Voting Rights rallies and marches, where members of the ASNN leadership team spoke about systemic voter disenfranchisement in multiple cities, this was followed by a powerful presentation from the ASNN.
I heard it say unmuted. Does that mean you guys can hear me? Can't hear you guys, though.
California. Oh,
Julie Martin, Sacramento, California.
Our host.
Uh-oh, it's hard to hear you guys.
Yeah, you got to remember, we're not on your mic over there. We're over here on the phone, so we'll have to talk from this end. Hey, guys, don't mind us. Like I said, we're doing this outside. It's a new thing, so bear with us. We're going to make it hot. I hope you enjoyed that first track that went on. We got our guests all here. We got our mics open, and we're going to do our best to make it nice and clear and powerful, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So tell them what it is today.
It's another day in the world of being black, and sometimes challenges happen,
exactly.
And we fight through because we are resilient people.
Exactly.
Yes,
now, you're getting some echo
are.
Over there because of this, right? Maybe you should just take off your earphones and just have your mic, like, next to you, and then we could talk freely to each other. That way you don't actually hear it in your ear.
Let's see how this works out right now. There we go.
All right. So you can hear me talking to you, right? Like right in front of you here?
Yeah.
Ain't
like that.
There you go. There you go. It's much better. Exactly. So we can get the show on the road. I think you had a few more things to mention about in regards to the past couple of days so people know what it is we just did and where we're going with.
Sure. So we've come a long way since we heralded the birth of the abolitionist nation in season 1, episode 24. We did everything we said we would do from there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long time ago.
A whole year and a day.
A whole year and a day. So more than everyone ever expected we could do, and it wasn't a prophecy or a prediction, it was the plan.
It was the plan.
And so to quote the late astronaut Kalpana Chawla, she said, "The path for dreams to success do exist. May you have the vision to find it, the courage to get onto it, and the perseverance to follow it." And that's what we've accomplished
getting to
this point.
That's
that
right.
When we set out, we had a goal in mind. And our goal was to abolish slavery, spread the word from state to state to state to state. And we know a big part of that is you, Max, Dennis Febo, Savannah Eldridge, and the entire ASNN, especially the
Jamelia Land, Kamal Allen, Nathan,
Nate, I forgot Nate Page,
yeah.
And Melina Cohen, and Sandra Hollins, and if I forgot your name, please forgive me. I know it's a lot of people.
Sarah
names.
Morden,
Bianca
Tyler.
Bianca Tyler,
yes.
Rose Rises.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the entire Abolish Slavery National Network that's all over the country for everyone who attended the March on for voting rights yesterday,
mm-hmm.
which here in Sacramento was a march on for voting rights, as well as the Abolish mm-hmm. Slavery National
Absolutely.
Network celebration here in Sacramento, California, as well as what went on online on Zoom yesterday, the big meeting. We had marches in Washington, D.C. yesterday. They were in Atlanta, Georgia, and I think it was one other location, wasn't it?
Jamelia, what was the cities that we was coordinating with yesterday?
So it was Washington, Atlanta, Arizona. Unfortunately, we had to cancel most of our Texas events due to COVID. But yeah, it was huge. I don't know if you all have had an opportunity to check out the news feed yet, but it's trending everywhere. It's
trending
amazing.
Everywhere.
Another historical day.
Amen to that, man. Yeah, I got a couple phone calls today from various people that convinced me we made a hell of an impact yesterday. They're like, "Max, you know I've been down with you guys since the beginning, right? You got to let your people know." I'm like, "Oh, okay, we must have made an impact, man." You were there, and you spoke as well. So you want to tell us a little bit about your experience yesterday here in Sacramento at the March on for Our Voting Rights? And introduce yourself as
well. Absolutely. So I am Sonia Lewis. I am one of the former chapter leads with BLM Sacramento. And so we've been on the ground doing work when it comes to state-sanctioned violence for many years here in Sacramento. And so I'm not new to being in the environment of state capitals and pushing legislation and working with and collaborating with organizations, because we know that that's important. We know that it's important to throw everything in the kitchen sink at them, because the system of white supremacy is that deep and embedded in this country. And so since my time with BLM, I have been focusing on educational equity. I'm the owner of Ascribe Educational Consulting, and I have a nonprofit called Edify Humanity. And so my relationship with the ACA3 has just been a matter of showing up and being a voice where I can, just to lift those issues. And in lifting those issues, sometimes I'm called upon to, like, connect the historical dots of how we got here today. And so that was the crux of what I spoke about yesterday at the march, because it's important that we understand, as we talk about abolishing slavery on one hand in every state, you know, legislation, as we also talk about voting rights, that the two are so interwoven and connected. It's not something that we can frown upon. It's not something that we can ignore. We have to continue to put action in motion right now.
Right. Last week on our program, the title was 10 million plus violations of the 15th Amendment. And at the meeting, or at the march, that was one of the things that I expressed,
right,
that there's at least 10 million living people who cannot vote due to this spelling bee disenfranchisement system. And then there's 100 million people who won't vote because they're so disgusted with the system. It's let them down so many times. If you go and look at the hood in 2000 and you look at it in 2021, there ain't much difference. So, you know, everybody's came and gone and things are still the same. So they don't have a lot of faith. And I wanted to give them, well, my purpose was, I want to give them a reason to vote, not somebody to vote for, but a reason to vote, to get up there and say, you know, this affects me directly and all my family members. And I've got people in prison, and I've been paying these prison phone bills, trying to call my cousin, brother, mother, father, sister, son, and we need to do something about this. So you can go in and vote. We're going to get it on ACA3 on the ballot for 2022.
Absolutely.
ACA3 will remove the language in the California Constitution, which allows for involuntary servitude, forcing people to work in these, what is it, 33 prisons?
Yes.
33 prisons with as many as 70 factories built right into the prison.
Absolutely.
And even right now with the prison firefighters, Jamilia has been telling us over and over again, they told these firefighters, you know, all that credit time that we gave you, you're not getting any of that. You got to stay here and continue to fight fires because we can't afford to hire firefighters.
Right.
So we want you to do this for $2 a day for maybe until you die.
And it's so ironic. You know, Jamil and I have so many connections that when we talk about the journeys and how we got here to this place. So my son, 2 years ago, was in one of the facilities here in California, and he was a firefighter on the fire line.
Mm.
And it was amazing that how quickly he was able to pay off his restitution, but how unjustly he wasn't allowed to use the money that were, I mean, and the firefighting jobs, those are like hot commodity jobs because other jobs within the prison system, you're getting paid pennies on the dollar, right? Mm-hmm. And so for someone to get paid $2 a day, that's like a commodity, but still not be able to afford phone time, still not be able to afford, you know, the extras that you need to just to feel like you can survive and make it through the time. And, you know, knock on wood, thank God he is out. He's still going through the struggle of trying to be that person who has a felony record on his background and trying to be employed, trying to get housing, trying to get into school and just live. He voted last year for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yes. And that was like astronomical in my world because I'm the voter in our household, so I get 6 votes. You know, because my husband, my sons, my daughter, they hand their ballots over to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was huge to say, son, just because you have a felony and just because this is your background, there are things that people, you know, we've been fighting for, and one of them is the right for felons to be able to vote. And so that was really huge for us.
Yeah, Prop 17 was a big push forward for that here in California, as well as I think it was Amendment 4 in Florida that they did it as well. You know, it was crazy in Florida. 1 in 5 black men couldn't vote.
Yep.
Like, who knew? 1 in 5 of all black men in the whole state could not vote. And in places like Milwaukee County, it's even higher than that. More than 1 in 2 can't vote in Milwaukee County because of felony convictions. Julie's here with us as well. Julie is hosting our B&B here with us. And she was one of the people who attended the rally and to see us speak, as well as some of the performances that we put on. Tell us about your experience, Julie.
Oh, my goodness. Where do we even start? You know, it was an interesting experience for me because we're BLM supporters, but obviously you can't get any whiter than me.
Right.
So I don't share the black experience.
Right.
That doesn't mean that I don't, you know, that there's no empathy,
right?
But what my experience this weekend between talking to you, Max, and Tribal, and everybody, and going to this rally was it took my support
from an intellectual
right.
Realm into something that's very heartfelt, and it personalized it for me in a really impactful way. And I think I'm actually changed.
Yeah.
Mm. And so amazing for me. And I wish that you could get this message out to more people in the way that you did it yesterday, or this person to person. Again, so many allies out here that, because, you know, we're not insiders in your organization.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to share it. And I listened to your music list.
Oh, yes, yes.
On the YouTube last night. And that was awesome.
if you're listening, she's talking about the abolitionist music, which is available at youtube.com/abolitiontoday.
Hey.
Just click abolitionist music playlist and let it just, you know, rotate.
It's awesome.
What is it? You know, random play, they call it,
yeah.
right? Random
yeah.
play. Just let it random play and you'll love it.
It's got something for everybody,
uh-huh.
right? You know,
uh-huh.
you know, if you don't like one song, you'll like the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you will. So anyway, that was my experience.
Thank you for sharing that, indeed. You know, I believe that if a movement doesn't have music, it's not a movement.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You've got to have everything involved, art, you've got to have music, you've got to have poetry, and we pride ourselves on sharing that here and showing people that, you know, we hear a lot of times people say, well, there's nothing out. It's all crap.
Yeah.
Stop listening to these commercial broadcasts,
right.
you know, support independent media. We got the fire here, as you just heard. With the remake of Chuck D's Fight the Power, you know? And we got more to come, as a matter of fact. Much more to come. Jamelia, are you still there with us?
I am here.
Jamelia, all right, awesome. So I want to pass the mic over to you, my sister. You know, you've been at the heart of all of this out here. You helped, you primarily organized the events. You got everything that needed to be done. I get to ride shotgun with you a little bit and watch you work, which is pretty awesome. But tell us a little bit about your experience over the weekend and even leading up to it.
Oh, it's all a blur, Max.
a blur, Max.
It all looks like lack of sleep in reverse. So first I want to say hello to my sister Sonia, and Sonia is also an instrumental member of our coalition, of the California Abolition Act Coalition, along with, you know, Auntie and Sis. But I really just appreciate having her voice here in this space with us today. I look forward to, you know, her being in this space with us more often. So Sonia, Allegra, Leia, and myself are the actual organizers for the March on for Voting Rights event that happened yesterday. I'd love to try to take credit for it all, but I would never do that because I know how important and instrumental my sisters have been in being, you know what I'm saying? So we are a bad girl band. We don't necessarily sing the best. we don't necessarily sing the best, but we damn sure know how to fight the best. So, you know, I'm always proud to just be in fellowship with my sisters. You know, it's been a lot of work, Max, you know, between the march and the coalition. It all just kind of ran together, but you know, we've been coordinating and working on these marches for the past few months. I've been in our war rooms having conversations with, you know, the Drum Major Institute, leadership of SEIU, Al Sharpton and Mann and all the stuff. And, you know, we've had a lot of hiccups. Yesterday, unfortunately, due to the weather, we were not able to move forward with the march, but it still came together very well. Yeah, so we're currently experiencing some really bad fires. As you can see, it was nice and foggy and difficult to breathe, but nonetheless, we were able to successfully pull it off yesterday. And so, you know, we had one hell of a week. ACA 3 passed through appropriations. It came off of suspense and passed through appropriations. So, you know, we're moving one step closer to that. in addition to it being, you know, the 58th anniversary of the March on Washington and all that work, you know, it was a very, very special day for me as well, in being able to celebrate Abolish Slavery National Network's one-year anniversary. You know, we have done an amazing amount of work in a year's time. And, you know, we like to operate quietly behind the scenes, and then all of a sudden we, like, kind of pop out like a pimple. And so it's nice to see. It's really nice to see that all of our collective effort has not been for naught. And I really want to thank the Airbnb host. You know, I saw her and her husband and the dog there yesterday, and I want to say that, you know, that's what it takes, right, for us to be able to have these conversations, irregardless of our backgrounds in life, right, and being able to come together and work for the betterment of all of us as a humanity collectively. And so, you know, I want to thank her for coming and, you know, being so gracious of a host as she has been, and taking part in these conversations, you know. And I look forward to, you know, to what the future holds and all of that. So it's been one heck of a week. I'm so tired. I can barely see straight, Max.
Like I said, I got to ride shotgun with you, and I passed out on the way a couple times. I woke up, you were carrying me on your back at one point, I remember. Like, we only got 30 more feet to go, Max. Military style. But, yeah, you know.
Yeah, you guys got to see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff.
One of the things that you mentioned is the weather conditions. You know, I'm not used to this. I'm from South Carolina. The sky's blue. You know what I mean? When you come through here and you smell nothing but smoke and it's covered the entire sky and it looks like you're in somebody's cooking and they're about to cook you. The first thing in my mind was, why in the hell have you not evacuated the whole city? Like, why are you even here?
Right.
Because this is dangerous as hell.
And so imagine places where our prisons are located and folks will not be, you know. Imagine that you're in the cells and in these structures that have little to no ventilation, right? And then they're forced to stay inside in those conditions.
Like the Paris jails right now in Louisiana that are subject to a Category 4 hurricane.
Yep.
Moved up to a 5.
Right.
Yes. Category 5.
Right.
I'm glad to hear you. I'm glad to hear you all mention that, right? Because that's something that people aren't really talking about or looking at. You know, when we talk about what's happening around mass incarceration, you know, a lot of times, especially like now, you know, with ACA3, people want to talk about the issues of wages, but we are actually talking about humanizing other human beings, which should never have to be a discussion, right? Because we are all humans, but here we are nonetheless. And so, like we are dealing with Louisiana and the storms that are approaching, but also here in California, making note of the fires, two things that are very significant that I would like to make note of. One of those is that we have prisons that are sitting in severe danger of a fire, right? Right now, Susanville, the city of Susanville, has been being evacuated over the past week or so. However, there's two prisons in Susanville. They have no intentions of evacuating them. So what happens to the men on the inside of those facilities when the fire approaches? They're going to be abandoned. They're going to be left to die. And that is very unfortunate. And so it takes a community of people, and this is my rally cry and my call to action. I just haven't been able to do it yet because I'm dog tired, but in the next few days we will be putting out that call to action that it's time, we got to stand up and we got to make note, because while COVID is getting ready to start ravaging through the prisons again too, we have to be mindful that we have men and women inside these prisons that are subjected to these fires. And then on the flip side of that, we also have the incarcerated firefighters here. In the state of California, two-thirds of firefighters in the state are incarcerated. Let that sit in for a minute. Two-thirds of the firefighters in the state of California are incarcerated firefighters. And now California has decided that because we are in the middle of these horrific fires, that it is going to renege on its contractual agreement with the inmates, and now they will not be released, regardless of what their release dates are. so that they can fight these fires. However, they can't go up to Susanville and help their fellow incarcerated brothers or sisters evacuate from those fires.
Right.
So, you know, it's a lot of contradiction. It's a lot of problems that are happening.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of contradictions going on. As I said, for me, not seeing anything like that ever before, I'm like, why are you guys still here? And then on top of that, you know, as you said, those people who are most susceptible and can't do anything to protect themselves are at the mercy now of the decision makers,
right,
who never make any damn good decisions about them, or they wouldn't be there to begin with.
Absolutely.
Tribal Rain, we haven't heard anything from you. Anything you want to comment on? Tribal Rain is actually over here streaming us live from somewhere. Where are you streaming to?
Streaming from Facebook, actually. And
what page?
From my web page, because I couldn't get onto the Abolitionist Today web page.
All right, so if you want to see us live stream, it's Tribal Rain with a R-A-I-N-E at the end. Don't forget the E at the end on Facebook. And shoot her a friend request.
Yes, definitely shoot her a friend request.
All right, what I want to do is, you know, that was some deep knowledge, and I want to take a quick break for some music and to bring us back full circle to where we began about voting rights, what we were involved in yesterday. So we've got a nice little musical mix set up for us to be able to come to, you know, to learn a little bit more and also be moved by the music. So, Yusef, you want to tell them what we got coming up?
Sure. The next track is A History of Voting Rights. This is by the New York Times, and it'll be followed by My Vote Will Count by Yellow Pain featuring Severin Streeter.
Abolition. Abolition.
In this scene from the 2012 movie, Abraham Lincoln spells out the terms of Reconstruction.
All they heard was the first time any president has ever made mention of Negro voting.
In 1865, he said freed slaves who were intelligent or had served as soldiers should be allowed to vote. The 14th Amendment, passed in 1868, guaranteed this right as part of the full citizenship accorded to African American men. But for much of the 20th century, voting remained a contentious issue. The 19th Amendment, ratified in 1920, gave women the right to vote, but the racial divide remained. Some states continue to limit voting, either through measures like the poll tax or direct intimidation of African American voters. In the South, there were even whites-only primaries. This is Sam Tannenhouse of the New York Times. The first modern Civil Rights Act was signed by President Eisenhower in 1957. It created a federal commission authorized to enforce voting rights. Senator Strom Thurmond conducted the longest filibuster in history, more than 24 hours, in an effort to thwart the bill. But it passed.
The location for the meeting with Senator Ribicoff.
Still, voting was not equal for all. Massive resistance in the Deep South was organized to keep blacks from the polls, and legal enforcement was hampered by all-white juries. Voting rights became a central issue in the civil rights movement.
I think this march will go down as one of the greatest.
In 1965, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. led the march from Selma to Montgomery for better voting laws. The nation was shocked by images of the marchers being attacked. And less than 5 months later, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It barred states and districts from curtailing the vote on the basis of race, color, or language.
It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country.
Sections 4 and 5 of the bill included special provisions to ensure fair voting practices in a number of states, most of them in the South. Citizens there continue to be disenfranchised, but the Supreme Court's close ruling on Tuesday, striking down Section 4, suggests that conditions have changed since 1965, and it is left to Congress to reconsider the act.
Well, he was in office for 8 years, bro. Still ain't getting nothing done for us.
Bro, you and me done worked at this barbershop some whole 8 years, bro. They don't care about us, bro.
No, that's fact, though. I really don't even remember the last time a president did something for us, to be honest.
Yeah, I ain't trying to go out on that sun and vote.
Bro, you literally don't know what you're talking about, bro.
First thing first, you know back in middle school when they taught us it was three branches of the government. We forgot it when we got older. It's the judicial, the legislative, and executive. But all we know is the executive. That's the mayor or the governor and the president. Now none of them three people make no laws, they just be checking them. The laws come to their desk and all they do is say no or yes to it. So when the news station tried to tell us that Barack Obama couldn't put us on, we was all salty at Obama when it was the Congress members out along. We gotta focus on the legislative branch, yeah, they the ones that make the laws. Yeah, they the ones write how much food stamp money you get on the card. But when people that wanted to help us wanted the job, I know they probably lost. Cause we ain't even know their name, we ain't know their face, we ain't know it all. So the Congress or the State House, that's legislative, they make laws. So what we want from the president is what they do, okay y'all? See, they election every 2 years, but we don't ever even go to those. The Congress, they can raise minimum wage, but we ain't even really know it though. So you know how back in 08, when we all voted for Obama, we was all supposed to go back in 2010 and vote for the Congress. Cause they the ones make child support laws, they the ones choose if your kids at school get to eat steak or corn dogs. The State House make the court calls. So if the country failed, then you can't say it's them, it's your fault. Cause y'all ain't know to vote for Congress members, that was for y'all. And they don't gotta leave after 4 years, and we just let them sit. See, they don't wanna tell you this, they want you to focus on the president. Now the third branch is the judicial, that's judges. They the reason why John Crawford and Trayvon ain't had justice. So when Meek Mill got locked up just for popping willies, we blame the judge and not the city when they let her get voted in, cause they ain't know who to vote against. Imagine life on the other side. Roads better, schools better, everybody get their license back, grocery store food better, custody of your kids back, homeless people get new shelters. If we gon' fix the U.S., we gotta start with them two letters, me and you. Somebody told us that the government wanna keep us broke, but the only reason why those people in the government is cause we ain't vote. And I ain't talking about the president, I'm talking about the ones we ain't know. See, they was gonna try to keep it low, but it's gonna hurt them when they see the polls.
I know the world won't give me nothing, so I gotta take it. And I know it's a way we can win, why won't nobody say it? They'd rather keep us down. Could have a war, but we don't know how. Don't let them say that your vote don't count.
Abolition. 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 Abolition.
Welcome back to Abolition Today with Max Tarthas and Yusuf Hassan. That was A History of Voting Rights, the New York Times. That was followed by My Vote Will Count, Yellow Pain, featuring Severin Streeter. Let's start off with Sonia. How did you feel about the information that we got and the track that you heard?
You know, I'm always inspired by Yellow Man because he just being prolific in a way to make it exciting.
To also couple that with some historical foundation through what we know that has happened in real life to in this country. And so it's hugely important that we just hone in on this in this moment.
Very much so. I got a question, and I prepped y'all before. You heard what was discussed in the track that we just played regarding the history of voting rights, particularly the Civil Rights Bill, where they gutted Part 4. And the reasoning that they gave in the Supreme Court was that, you know, it's a different age and it's not necessary anymore. And Congress needs to decide now on how to deal with this. Have we really changed since the 1964 Voting Rights Act?
Go ahead, Jamila.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying we've gotten worse. Go ahead, Sonia.
I would definitely agree that it's worse. It's see, then we black folks knew and poor folks knew and women knew, you know, what they couldn't do, right? And so the fight was at least let's get a foot in the door, right? But today, now that the law has changed supposedly, and I put my air quotes there intentionally, because we know that we are facing intentional attempts and attacks at those very same people, black folks, poor folks, brown folks, indigenous folks, and women who for primarily they go to work every day and they already have limited access. So you're not just talking about a gender inequity. You're not talking about a racial inequity. You're also talking about an economic inequity. And so I think all of those things are very indicative to where we were in the 1960s, specifically when King was about to die, when he was about to be assassinated, and his plight and his mission was the Poor People's Campaign. Like, how can I bring black folks and poor folks and white folks together so that we can understand that we all got the same oppression, not in the sense of oppression Olympics, which we know nobody wins in oppression Olympics, but in the sense of coming together because there's solidarity in that oppression, and we know that we are the target. And if we understand that we have the same target on our backs, maybe we can unify and take over the powers that be. But the powers that be have that strong arm chokehold around our necks in a way that causes us to continue to be divided.
Thank you so much for that, Sonia. You know, I'm actually smiling as Max is asking the question because, you know, we got up in the morning yesterday and we were watching the news, and the first thing I saw was one of the anchors sitting there with a smile in her face, talking about it's been 58 years since Dr. King's march, and they're marching for voters' rights. And I said to myself, how can she say that with a smile on her face, that 58 years later, we're still marching for voters' rights?
The same thing.
You know, we know what Frederick Douglass told us back in the 1800s about his three boxes, the cartridge box, the voting box, or what was it, the jury box?
The jury box.
The jury box. And then Malcolm told us the ballot or the bullet,
right?
And here we are all these years later still talking about voting rights, you know, but yet there is a faction of society that tell us to get over certain things and to pull ourselves up as if people aren't out here blocking things. And we know every time that they put something in legislation, there's always some type of loophole there. And we know that that loophole ties all the way back to accept this punishment for
absolutely
a crime. And it also extends beyond the prison system. This is why we're having this conversation. So, yes, we have the 10 million plus that have been disenfranchised from voting, and then that's counting those of us in society who are still being disenfranchised. You know, we know, I forgot the number. I'm sure Jamila or Sonia know the number of bills that have been passed, or Max, the number of bills that have been passed just since the last election to put more restrictions on voting. And these are the modern-day poll taxes and literacy tests, but they put it in a different form nowadays, Max.
I think it's over 300 bills.
Over 300.
Yeah, right?
Close to 400.
Close to 400 bills put forward in order to suppress voting rights one way or another. You know, and they say it's really something that's so basic. Like, you're supposed to have an ID, right? Well, look at me, for instance, right? I have a medical condition, so I don't drive. I don't have a driver's license. I have a state ID. Mm-hmm. And that state ID is not accepted. You need a driver's ID.
Well,
so how do you get a driver's ID if you don't pick and drive? You know?
And the common sense in that just doesn't make common sense to some folks because they know that these are the hiccups along the way that will prevent. That's that part of limiting access,
right? And the other part is, they'd like to suspend our licenses as a punishment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're trying to get to work, and they want to take away our car.
Yeah.
And then we don't have a license. And now once you don't have a license, if you're in a state that requires a valid driver's license to vote, guess what? You can't vote now.
Right.
Even though
right.
you haven't been convicted of anything,
right.
you just can't vote because you don't have a driver's license. And there's so many millions that have lost their driver's license mm-hmm. because reasons for not paying fines that had nothing to do with drinking driving.
Right. Well, these illegal police stops that they set up in inner cities around the country where they just, you know, they'll have a whole line of police cars and they're just pulling people over.
Absolutely.
Which is definitely unconstitutional. It just never gets fought properly in the courts. And so that's their way of like randomly rounding people up. Sure, go ahead, Jamila. Jamelia.
I'm sorry, if I can interject real quick, as we know as well, That is the number one encounter that most people have with law enforcement is through traffic stops. And so we also see there's a direct correlation to, you know, people in this country that have encountered law enforcement and lost their lives at disproportionate numbers in comparison to others.
25% of those happen at traffic stops.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you have police officers who treat traffic stops like they're in the middle, you know, of a combat.
Right, mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And that's very indicative. We have a young lady right here in Sacramento right now who was, who is a college educated. Her family, her parents did everything right, sent her to college. She has a doctorate degree in engineering. She and her father were traveling back from the Bay Area after taking her two daughters and niece to the museum just for a cultural experience. And Solano Sheriff, as she and her father were switching drivers because she was tired and giving her father, yeah, hey, I'm tired, it's your turn to drive now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Sheriff saw her pull over. They asked her and inquired, what are you doing? She explained, mm-hmm, this is what I'm doing. And not only this is what I'm doing, but I have a 6-, 4-, and 3-year-old in the back of the car. And when the male officer approached the scene with his gun drawn, no crime has been committed. And at most, a traffic violation, right? You don't get a ticket. You get to get your beat.
Yeah.
Physically,
mm-hmm,
they pull you away from cameras. You,
yeah,
woman, 120 pounds, 5'2",
mm-hmm,
beaten unconscious for more than 5 minutes,
mm-hmm,
and the doctors now are saying that that's a third degree concussion when you're unconscious for that length of period of time.
Mm-hmm.
They drug her into the back of the police cruiser.
Drug her
physically, mm-hmm, and when she was arrested and she came, you know, to, they denied the severity of her unconsciousness so that she couldn't get medical treatment. Was booked and then released. No charges have been filed against this woman because they know that there was no charges to be filed. But now that we are, you know, presenting a federal lawsuit, they want to come out and say that she was combative and that she hit an officer in the face and that she slipped out of handcuffs. No, these things didn't, you can see it on the video, that it didn't happen, but that's the traffic stop. So we have to worry about how traffic stops can potentially end for us because it can be life and death. I you know, I would be remiss not to say Sandra Bland's name.
Right.
You know, because that's a real around, right.
Mm-hmm. Orlando Castillo.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A traffic stop.
If I can kind of piggyback with Sonia to just really explain the depth of these problems, right? There's a case here in Sacramento in Placer County that occurred this past January. Young man by the name of Albert Zavala. About 1:20 in the morning. Him and his girlfriend were going to Thunder Valley Casino. They were pulled over by an officer. Long story short, the officer snatches open the driver's door, jumps into the vehicle with his knees in this young man's lap. He's face to face with him. The young man has his hands up in the air. The officer removes his weapon, shoots the young man point blank range 3 times, scatters his arm in 25 places. He then tucks and rolls out of the vehicle. The vehicle, you know, pulls up a ways. The young man stops. They have him hang his arm out of the window for over 2-3 hours. No medical attention. They try to let him bleed out. Finally, when the ambulance gets there, same officer who shot him gets in the ambulance with him. The ambulance driver tells him that, you know, or the paramedic tells him, we need to remove the handcuffs so that we can render medical attention. And the officer tells him in front of the paramedic, if you move, I'll blow your fucking brains out. Now, this officer this is his third department in 5 years. And so the young man he's still incarcerated. Okay. They took him to the hospital. They then arrested him and booked him. He's looking at 25 to life for his own assault. For his own assault. You know, they went to his first bail hearing. They said that $200,000, went back, asked for a reduction. The judge raised it to $1 million, went back for another. Started at $70,000, raised it to $1 million, and now it's down to $200,000. And all the while, this young man does not have a criminal record. He was the one that was injured. This officer is still out in the communities. And these are the things that are happening every single day that nobody talks about. Albert is biracial. He is half African-American, half Hispanic, you know. But does that matter? Should that matter? Because there was a young white woman that was killed by Webster County Sheriff.
Yep.
You know, not too long ago, within the past 2 months. And so, you know, these are the things that you know, when we go back to, I know we're talking about, you know, voter disenfranchisement, but all of these things are relevant. They all intersect, right? The fact that, you know, you can, you know, in certain households, in impoverished households, when you go for social services, most of the time it's the women, and you have to say that the male is not in the house in order to get those services. Well, they also have you sign all of these forms, right, so that they can now open up a child support case against him in order to collect the money for the benefit payments that the state is giving you. So now, you know, you're being incentivized by the state to not have the man in the home in order to be able to help raise and rear the children. And so once that child support case is open and he likely does not have any income, why? Because the household is in need of food stamps and some cash aid to be able to survive. Now his driver's license is suspended for non-payment of child support. And
yep.
So that ties into being pulled over and not having a valid license and the potential of being shot and killed. And so, you know, I don't think people really understand the depth of these things.
Oh, is it me or you?
Sorry, can you hear me? I broke out.
You're back.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think that people really understand the depth of these things, and it's very unfortunate that most people don't want to go deep with the conversations.
Right. And that's on top of the fact of, in certain states, depending on where you live, not being able to vote because of that ID issue.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not new things. And when we talk about, you know, the spread out and continued intentional denial of access to the resources, I call it taxation without representation.
Mm-hmm.
They will tax us all day long, especially those who are in the lower economic stratas, right, because classism is a thing. But our green dollars don't prevent us from, you know, getting just the basics. And so we have to deny the fact that the children have fathers. We have to deny and lie to skate around the system in order to get access to things that are just basic necessities in life.
Yes, absolutely. I also think that, well, we already know, it's important to be careful about a couple things. One is your language. We're talking about slavery. Let's talk about slavery.
Right.
Let's not call it something else.
Right.
And what we're dealing with these police who are out here hunting people on the streets and traffic stops is a for-profit industry. And
absolutely,
when you hunt people for profit, that's called slavery. So if we didn't have that happening, we wouldn't have these interactions, and it would be, our lives would have been saved.
Mm-hmm.
In South Carolina, I believe it was 2015, there was over 3 million tickets that had been written by the highway patrol. Over 3 million. And you're talking about $200 a pop. Man.
Wow.
You're talking about nearly $1 billion of revenue,
right,
that they're taking from people who can afford it the most. And because we have a top-heavy Eurocentric police force, they choose to target the most vulnerable, people who can't fight back, who they assume don't have the resources or the ability to fight them back and just have to give up what they've got.
Yeah.
So, you know, this happens every day. But again, we got to be clear about what it is we're dealing with, because the question I always ask is, how many slaves do you got to catch before you become a slave catcher?
Right.
And if you just do it one damn time, you have fit the criteria. You qualify as a slave catcher.
Absolutely.
Right. And on top of that, they end up in the system. I'm sorry, Jamili, just one point real quick. Once they're in the system, now they're facing 95% white prosecutors, 87%, I believe, or 83% are white males, and 97% of the cases end up in plea bargains.
Right.
So therefore, their Sixth Amendment rights have gone out the window, because they have their public defenders and certain defense attorneys where their job is to convince them that the deal that the prosecutor has offered them is the best deal that they're going to get. There's no, you know, I want to fight my innocence or anything of that nature. So people are forced, it's sort of like forced confession,
absolutely,
because you know, if you go to trial, they're going to throw the book at you. They're going to bury you under the jail, and you'll spend the next 30 or 40
yeah.
years trying to make your way out
mm-hmm.
of the system.
And based on your numbers alone, imagine the cases that are going to trial, and you get a jury, and then that jury, especially if you live in a Sacramento County, about 90% of folks who are selected for juries are white folks. And so that's indicative of, you know, the impact in our system that we're conditioned to decline and say that we don't want to be a part of the jury system, even if we are, you know, registered voters. We are, in our mind, it's like they got us again and they want our free labor again because mm-hmm. they don't pay us enough to show up and even participate in the jury system.
Right.
But that's an important piece of the equation as well.
Well, most of them aren't even in the position to even
right.
serve on the jury because they don't have jobs with benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the issue of we all think we got warrants. And it's true. The warrant industrial complex is
yeah.
huge. In Missouri, in Ferguson, Missouri, I believe it was like 22,000 residents with over 36,000 warrants.
Right.
You got more warrants than you had people.
Wow.
And there's many counties like that. So, you know, black folks, we often like, I might have some warrants.
Right.
I don't want to know
I ain't coming
yeah.
here.
I don't know what I didn't pay.
Right.
But I didn't pay a few things.
So
you know?
Back to you, Jamelia. I'm sorry. I sent us down this rabbit
yes,
hole in
did.
Another direction. I'm sorry.
You guys,
it's okay because, you know, I like going down the rabbit hole. I'm real good with it. Just a couple things, you know, in regards to, you know, the practicing of, you know, the extraction of resources, financial resources from an impoverished community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I have, you know, y'all know me. I have no shame in saying it. I got a couple of friends, people that I really consider to be friends that happen to also be in law enforcement. One of those friends is Edwin Raymond. He is a lieutenant in the NYPD. He stood with Colin Kaepernick, and he also did a documentary called Crime and Punishment. Him
mm-hmm.
and several other New York police officers went undercover, and they recorded the racist practices and the things that were being said and done, especially around ticketing in the New York subway system and how they were being instructed to target African-American and Latino males specifically. And we know, right, like, look at the Khalil Broward story. Look at the impact that, you know, not just the systemic racism that's involved, but it's like I said, a black body has no value at all unless it's tied to an economic engine that we don't profit from. And so that's why we are constantly being subjected to, you know, these horrendous pieces of legislation, psychological indoctrination of other people as to how to encounter us. We are the most hated people on the planet, you know.
On the planet.
Everybody thinks that it's okay. We have been so dehumanized. We have been portrayed in such a manner that, you know, we are these savage, beastly people. We have no intelligence. We have no morals and values about ourselves. We're just breeders that, you know, we don't believe in family structure and community and all these things, right? But when you turn around and you look at America and the society that we are, it's amazing to me that America has been built on our blood, sweat, and tears, and that without our labor in so many areas, this country would not be able to stand. Yet,
absolutely.
Here we are in 2021 fighting to end legalized slavery in the United States of America, and we are actually encountering opposition. We have states like Louisiana that are saying, oh, no, this is some of the most dangerous legislation we've ever seen. We do not want to end legalized slavery. This is our bread and butter, you know. So,
right.
It, like Max says, it always goes back to what is the root issue. You know, for everybody that knows me, it's about getting to the root issue. Like, you know, in law enforcement, I hate hearing that shit. Like, it's not implicit bias. It's racism. Period. Root at the core is racism. You know what I mean? And it is a socially constructed thing. Racism is a socially constructed thing. And we are sick with, you know, the ramifications from it. But yet and still here we are continuing to fight. So And I just wanted to share that little tidbit. I'm really enjoying the conversation with you all. I'm so glad that Sonia has been able to be a part and contribute to this conversation.
Absolutely. And I was sharing with the crew that's here on location that, you know, I have a son who is currently at San Quentin. And it was amazing to me because he's up for, now granted, so let me give you some background, just a little bit of details. At the age of 18, graduated from high school, special ed, and has been tested that, you know, he possibly has had autism and some other neural, you know, dysfunctions. And, you know, in our community is like, okay, that person is not all the way here, right? We don't have the language to articulate what the diagnosis is, so we just qualify it and quantify it as that person's not all the way here.
Mm-hmm.
And so graduated from high school, never been suspended from high school, never having a referral, never a bad report about anything. And on his way home from walking home one afternoon, a police officer pulled him over in the city of San Francisco. And the woman inside of the vehicle says, it could be him, but I'm not sure. And that was enough to get an 18-year-old who never had a criminal background, never had a bad background in school, convicted of rape, and has been incarcerated since then. He is now 41 years old and was up for parole this year. And he was just told, he called home, he was like, hey, Mom, I just want to let you know that my parole date that was supposed to be in August, we didn't write all the letters. We have all the community support. We have foundation for where he can come when he's released and all of the things. And he just was notified by the parole board that due to COVID, they're not having any, you know, parole board hearings, and so his has been pushed back to February.
Wow.
And so the hurt and pain he's already experienced of serving someone else's time, you know, but at the same time, the inhumanity of even being given a life sentence, right, 25 to life, and qualifying for all of the things that, you know, quote-unquote progressive prosecution is doing on the outside when they say that when you have these youth offenders who were given life and all this and that and the other, and all of the talk during COVID that, oh, he's eligible for early release due to COVID. He's eligible for early release due to him being a convicted juvenile. All of those things out the window. And on top of all of that, two times since he's been in San Quentin over this past 18 months, he has been diagnosed with COVID. And so all of the things that, you know, we as a family and he as an individual has experienced from the psychological, physical, and emotional standpoint of being in that place behind those walls is mind-blowing. It's heartbreaking.
Yes, and it's on all of us as family members. We have another caller that's here, one of our OGs of the ASNN, I believe, right?
Absolutely. Our brother Dennis Febo of Guasabara Insights out of the co-chair of the
co-director for the state operations.
Co-director of the state operations of the Abolish Slavery National Network.
Yeah.
And he has all kinds of things going on in New Jersey, as well as the ASNN. He played a vital part in bringing Max and I into the ASNN. So, Dennis, you're on the line, this brother. Welcome.
Let's say welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Peace,
welcome
family.
Home, brother.
Hey,
Peace.
Back from Cali.
Come to the mic.
All right, man. Good to know y'all all together. That's really, really dope.
Yes. So join in the conversation, brother. What do you want to add to it?
Man, you guys said so much stuff. I don't even know where to jump in.
You ain't got no poetry today.
Nah, I always got poetry, especially for this. But, yeah, man, I'm excited to see California's moving forward and that you guys are getting the attention that's needed, especially that Cali's one of the biggest contributors to mass incarceration in the country, especially
mm-hmm.
with the way they don't pay and become that prime example of what slavery is and
using the language, right, because Cali is also slavery is abolished but not involuntary servitude. It's kind of like that in-your-face play on words that has been like to been played over history, and I'm definitely excited to know that that's falling down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe there's two states that have that, North Carolina and California, where they don't have slavery on the books, but they do have involuntary servitude. It's like saying, we don't have poison on the books, but we do have the guillotine.
Right. So, Dennis, can you bring us up to date on some of the things that's going on with Free the 13th and ACR 145 in New Jersey?
Free the 13th? Oh, you mean amend the 13th.
Amend the 13th.
Free it, amend it, get rid of it.
Yeah, we're still waiting on the session. The session is on hiatus right now. We're waiting for them to reconvene. We did hear there was, I wouldn't say pushback. What they said was that they had a long, hard, good look at this bill, but didn't say anything further. It's been almost it's been a year now since the past committee. So we're thinking that we're going to have to go big when the session starts. We have to go really, really hard in New Jersey. It is the Democratic Party that's stonewalling this issue over here.
Wow.
And we also have people of color that are stonewalling the issue. I don't think out of all the legislators of color, only two have publicly made statements about amending the 13th or, you know, abolishing slavery. I've had legislators of color hang up on me when I'm trying to pitch this to them. So I think it's kind of funny, like, how we try to observe the way to move politically, and that we assume that because a state is red or a state is blue, we could see Nebraska and Utah both being red states and passing this with no issue, and here in Jersey it being a blue state, you know, a more heavily populated, you know, people of color population here in New Jersey, and we've gotten stonewalled. So it's just been interesting to see the dynamics.
New Jersey has one of the highest race-based incarceration rates in the nation. It's like 14 to 1.
It is the highest. The highest.
So for every one white person that is incarcerated, 14 black people are incarcerated. And they only make up, what, 24% of the population, if that? Or is it like 17%?
14%.
14%,
something like that. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like, it's a people under siege.
Yeah.
And there's a reason they call Jersey the Up South.
The Up South, yeah. It's a reason why
I'm like, with those types of numbers, are there any black people on the streets in Jersey?
Right.
I mean, when you look at the young population, you see them cycling right off the corner. Like, you see one bunch go. And then you see another one come in, and another one pops out, and just keeps cycling over and over again.
All right.
That's that piping.
Appreciate you calling in, brother. Thank you so much. For those that don't know, Dennis Febo is one of the main reasons that the Abolish Slavery National Network has over 30 states involved in this movement. You know, he's helped to organize like 26 of those states right now. And we're still working on more of them, even from scratch, getting them the legislation that they need, introducing them to legislators who will sponsor the bills, and then helping them through the process all the way up to the election period while he's trying to do it with his own state.
Right.
You know, between him and Savannah and myself, we've all been, like, doing that, each one carrying, like, 8 or 12 states, you know what I mean, trying to get it done.
Heavy work.
It is heavy work, and it's important work. Because I was asked
if I could
earlier,
jump in here real quick, Max.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, do we still have Dennis? Okay, so.
Yeah, I'm here.
Febo, I got to put you on the spot, man. I need you to go on and lace the listeners up a little bit with a little bit of that human rights stuff you got going on in there.
I've been arguing, man. We hear so much about people trying to be careful, or, you know, whether it be from the system and or it be on the community, and people are afraid of what justice would look like without there being privatization or privatization on the body. And all I keep arguing is no matter how anyone wants to argue this or slice it or split it or try to justify any reason why this should be remaining legal, we know that it is illegal in international law. The United Nations created this, and the United States actually ratified laws, international laws on slavery, yet still remains one of the only countries in the world to have it as a constitutional legality. So here we're arguing Section 4, slavery is abolished in all of its forms. And it's not just to humanize, because we have two needs of humanization. One is that we have been dehumanized through criminalization. And you hear it all the time, those criminals, or what do we do with criminals? Like the fact that you're called a criminal and you're dehumanized, disenfranchised politically, disenfranchised economically. And then we have humanization on paper. This is one of the only countries where you're removed from your humanity in law. Like, it's completely immoral, it's completely unethical, and it goes against what the world standards are supposed to be on this topic. I mean, we fought war after war over this. We're still fighting it in illegal fashions from around the world, but we have a legal one. Millions of dollars, millions of man hours being put upon this issue, yet no one has addressed head on that this is a legality in our country. So the plight is, regardless of what your fears may be, we must stand in law, in natural law, the law of God. As children of God, we should never be dehumanized. We should never be stricken away from what we know our rights to self-determine may be. So that's what I would add, you know, power to the people.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dennis. We got another caller, as a matter of fact, wants to join the conversation with his brother Sean Darling, who is the lead organizer in Maine to end slavery in the state of Maine. Go ahead and pull him in, Yusuf.
He's on.
All right, Sean, welcome to Abolition Today, brother.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey,
hey.
Sean.
Hey,
welcome,
Angelina, sorry.
Sean. Welcome.
I just want to say, I'm so excited. It's a one-year anniversary of Abolish Slavery National Network, and been thinking about what's been happening from last week to this week about not just the legality of the 13th, the 14th, the 15th Amendment, but with citizenship, this comes with a tremendous amount of political education, which you guys are doing a tremendous job with. But I also sort of think it's not just a regional problem. Like, I'm so glad it's a national network. It's not just, you know, like a southern issue, or like a, you know, it's like it's the whole, what's happening is the whole country. So that's something I've learned in the past year. You know, this is the whole country. You know, it may be worse in some parts of the country, but it's the whole country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. You know, I was looking at the sky yesterday with all that smoke in the air and thinking to myself of what Martin Luther King Jr. said about integrating his people into a burning house. And I'm like,
right.
There it is.
Right.
The house is burning, you know, both figuratively and literally, it is burning. So did you watch the events yesterday, as a matter of fact?
Yes.
Any highlights for you?
Well, the poem that you did was, I was just thinking, well, there's smoke, there's fire. That poem was fire. So it's like, it's like,
oh.
You know, the closing poem that was, what was the name of it again?
37
Pieces.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that was, it's like there was definitely, you know, the smoke was a warning to that. That was awesome.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. As always, I'm trying to make the most impact I can. You know, I was like, I feel like the world is on my shoulder at moments like that. Like, I have this one moment, and I might be able to be that catalyst to change everything with
Absolutely.
A few words. And I take it that seriously, you know?
Right.
But then I put on that bracelet that my wife made me, that it gives me a direct connection to the ancestors in the Whitney Plantation. And I imagine that Frederick was on one side and Harriet was on the other side going, Master, you got this. Come on, we're walking with you. And we walked up to the stage, and that was it for me, you know? I don't even know what I was saying after that. It was like they were talking, you know? I'm sure you felt kind of like that too, like the ancestors.
It's always a out of body experience, and afterwards it's like, what did I say, and did I touch on all of the points? And I know, you know, I don't have a doubt in my mind that the ancestors not only were with me, but the ancestors were leading in the direction mm-hmm. of the words, right? And my father relates this to this. My dad is an old time preacher. You know, so when he preaches, that's what he's so exhausted afterwards. And I feel the same way after I'm speaking. It's like, did I lay it all out there in a way that touched somebody, but at the same time left them with a call to action, something to do, inspired to go in and be the change that we need? Because at the end of the day, it's a matter of how we use our privilege to help those who have less privilege than us, even when we know we ain't got that much privilege. I'm a black woman. You know, what did Malcolm say? The most unprotected, the most disrespected, the most, what's
right.
the third one? It's three of them that he said, the most black women.
Disrespectful, most vulnerable,
you know. And so as a black woman, I walk in those shoes, but at the same time I know that there's somebody who's less privileged than me.
Well, you know, we're having a very vibrant conversation here, but we do want to share music with you guys as well. So what I'd like to do is take a music break, and then on the other side I have a question: what can people do to help? Mm-hmm. And I want everybody to participate in this, you know, what can people do to help, so we can give people actionable information.
Yeah.
What can you do to help? So with that being said, please, guys, hold on. We're going to keep this conversation going, mm-hmm. and we're going to take this music break. Yusuf, you want to tell them what we got coming up?
Sure. We have Joe Rogan on white people emulating black culture. Mm. And this is followed by...
Is that the name? Is that the name of the song?
You can't tell me that
name
again. I think I'm ready for that.
All right.
And that's followed by Common, When We Move, featuring Black Thought and Sion Kuti.
Oh,
you'll
good.
Be right back on Abolition Today.
AbolitionToday.org.
Abolition.
Okay.
Abolition.
Well, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense in terms of, like, people wanting to belong to a group that seems cool. And, like, black people seem like, overall, a cool group, right? Like, you have good music behind it. They have a funny way of talking. They have all these amazing pro athletes. They have a totally different kind of culture. And you identify with that culture, but you can't get in because you're a white girl. You're like, shit,
it's also
what do
something,
I do?
It's also something, I think also there's a romance, too,
yeah,
when
sure.
you're on the outside looking in. It's
mm-hmm.
struggle.
Oh, yeah.
And having been oppressed and all those
yeah.
things, and yet you triumph, yet you find a way to be funny, yet you
yeah.
find a way to be colorful, yet you find a way to be artistic. You know, yes, I mean, rap came from the South Bronx, while it was literally on fire.
Yeah, and rap is just one aspect of it, right? I mean, think about it. Some of the very best stand-up comedians, some of the very best musicians.
Jazz, dude.
Yeah, and you think of the percentage of the population that's black.
12%.
The percentage that become elite professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is the percentage of NBA players that are black? It's something crazy.
A lot of it's also just...
What is it?
I don't know, but it's pretty
guess.
High. I mean, there's...
69%?
Probably something like
that. I don't know
like
why
that.
I said that number. Jamie,
a lot of it might be just also that there are two avenues open to you in a lot of black communities. At least it's changing, but, you know, it was sports and music, right?
Yeah, for sure. That probably plays a part in it, no doubt about it. But it's also, there's an extraordinary number of professional athletes, like elite athletes,
yeah,
that just happen to be black. And what is that, though? Is it genetic? Is it the environment they're coming from? I mean, it's a fascinating thing to be explored, because for all this talk of racism, if you just want to be really honest, there's a lot of African Americans that have some pretty phenomenal genetic traits.
Bouncing mystic, realistic, and simplistic. Spirits visit, how we live it. It's intrinsic, it's McKissick. It's smeared like lipstick, colorful on our souls. A mouthful of gold or a drummer's roll. Stories get told about us, that's why things so blind without us. Wherever we are, you can feel the prowess. Whenever we move, yo, we turn the style up. I'ma just give black powered flowers.
whether in the project or the palace. Even when the pale horse tried to gallop and stir it up, we kept it balanced. We moved in silence, we moved the loudest. Ancestors in my dreams, they moved the wildest. They prayed about us, praised and shouted. Picture this country being brave without us. A slave's nostalgia moved through the woods with vigor. When we got free, the world moved with us. Now they wanna change their bodies, go figure. Used to call us, now they wanna be niggas. We the rivers that move through the jungle, yo. When we move, we make the world wonderful.
When we move, the whole world following our path. When we move, the whole world following our path.
And who can move like this? Let me see what I could do right quick. My people were made in whose likeness. Boy, fly niggas ain't never flew like this. Pitch black butterfly from the other side. Somebody's style was lost, it wasn't mine. I'm in a small demographic, a real one's dealing with all things classic. King fabric, linen and silk, from the home of the solid gold, honey and milk. The ones who built it from the mud, soil and sand. A black man, the world in the skin of his hand. Pop Della, sock when I shine, beyond Stella. Fella, Kwame and Crummer, Mandela, leader, true color. The ink well dweller, my pen signs the New York Times bestseller. When I move, y'all move in my wake. BD energy, I generate. How to never move weak, I demonstrate. Celebrating my peeps when I innovate. For my dons and divas, weighing eyes and evas to the non-believers, vagabonds and heathens, achievers. We ain't satisfied with dreaming. Long as I'm still breathing, watch how I move.
Because we have been making some moves,
yes.
And the whole world is watching, and they're waiting, because if we can get this done here, they can get it done all over the world.
All over.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So let's go ahead and get in, unless you have any commentary on what you just heard regarding the song and the track, we'll get into our question. Let's start with Brother Dennis Febo. Dennis Febo, I know you, and we've had a lot of conversations. And I know that in Jersey, you are kind of pissed off about the lack of support, as you mentioned, the Democratic Party blocking, the NAACP acting like they don't know nobody, National Action Network don't come around. What can people do to help, and who do you want to help?
Amen. So the way that people can help, I guess the only way to really do this is putting pressure on the key individuals who are controlling the flow the way this is supposed to work. So here in Jersey would be Assemblyman Coughlin, who is the head of the assembly, and we also have Senator Sweeney, who's the president of the Senate of New Jersey. So what people can do is reach out to their offices. If you Google their names, Craig Coughlin or Stephen Sweeney for the Senate and Assembly, respectively. You'll find their phone number, email, websites. They're also on social media. So all we got to do is keep putting pressure on these two individuals to put the items on the agenda so they can go for vote, so that the people of New Jersey can decide in a ballot measure. Besides that, you could do it in writing. You could do call them. And that's where we stand right now. There's not much we could do until these two guys decide they want to be racist anymore.
You guys are holding slaves
going on.
Wow.
Yes.
You know, they get to decide whether or not slavery is ended. Like, they're little dictators. Well, if you can, fam, put together a contact list for them, a way that we can reach out and let them know how we feel, and we'll share it across Abolition Today.
I have a question.
Julie's got a question. Go ahead, Julie.
So, Dennis, you know, so me here in California, if I start trying to pressure your folks out there in, where are you, New Jersey, they're not going to listen to me. They you know, they listen to their constituents is who they listen to. So, like, I can't write Mitch McConnell. He's not my senator. Mm-hmm. I can write Dianne Feinstein, but, hey, she's already kind of on our side, right? Mm-hmm. So do you have any advice for people who are listening that don't live in New Jersey on how they can vote?
So if I may jump in real quick and kind of answer a little bit of that for you, you may not be able to do anything in New Jersey, although I believe that all hands on deck are important and all voices are important. And so writing to whatever legislators in New Jersey is still beneficial. However, we are doing the same thing here in the state of California. And I am actually chair of the coalition. It's called ACA3, the California Abolition Act, and I am the coalition chair. And so you can write our senator. I actually have a website that you can go to. It's endslaveryincalifornia.org. There are toolkits on there. You have the ability to email your legislator, text your legislator, call your legislator, write a letter to your legislator, and other various tools, social media tools that you can use to help get the word out. So I'll be more than happy to share that with you.
Fantastic. Thank you. And I assume there are resources available in all 50 states.
You know, I've testified in like 6 different states that I don't live in, and I've sent in letters to senators and congressmen to every state I've helped organize.
Yeah.
I'm with Martin Luther King Jr. I don't believe that there is such a thing as an outside agitator for anybody that lives within the borders of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
This is all of our country. And if we let them get away with it in New Jersey, they'll get away with it in California.
Yeah,
and they'll get away with it in New York. Exactly. So we shouldn't be silenced because we don't particularly live there. It's still the same country.
But my only point was,
if I may interject one more time. I'm sorry, if I may interject one more time. We at Abolish Slavery National Network, we are also working on a federal resolution with Congressman Jeff Merkley and Congresswoman Nakima Williams. And so Senator Merkley and Congresswoman Nakima Williams. But, you know, so we still need those voices from the individual states. So while California is working on removing this language from our state's constitution, we are also simultaneously working on federal resolutions. So, you know, we need as many state citizens as possible to contribute their voices to their United States senators and congressmen as well in support of that federal resolution.
Thank you. Dennis, was there something more you wanted to add to that wish list? People, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry. Yeah, I'm here. I would say another thing to add is I've dealt with a lot of elected officials, and the way I see it is they're human beings, right? And for any one of us sitting at our computer, whatever position we have, and all of a sudden your inbox is being flooded from people all over the country, it's just as impactful as from within. So, yeah, they'll say they'd rather listen to constituents from their own state, but if there's a national outpouring into those two specific legislators' inboxes and voicemails and people picking up the phone at their office, it would have an impact. That is for sure. I would always encourage civic participation, no matter what. I agree with Max here. This is the United States. Every state is our brothers and sisters, and we should stand up for what everyone else is going through as well.
Thank you. All right, let me pass the mic over to Sean Darling. Sean Darling, you know, you're just getting started with Maine, and you've got a great legislator who is also the Assistant Speaker of the House, I believe, Rich Thomas-Ross. So it looks, and you have support over there. Maine is a progressive state, so it looks like you might get yourself a winner. Anything that you need, how can we help?
So I'm working on, we have, let's see, where to start. We do have Rachel on board. We have another constitutional amendment going through on food sovereignty, I think this year, so I may reach out to the representative that did that as well to see what his thoughts on the process for Maine. So I guess the next step is to just get that submitted to Rachel, and then to get, I've been talking to various groups to get some support in Maine, so people know what's going on. It's been slow, but we'll get there. hopefully though, if we get this bill in soon, it can be debated, I think, in January. Once I talk to Rachel, if we get something in, it can be debated in January and be sent to the voters for 2022. I'm hoping that's what's going to happen, but you know, if it doesn't, then you know, obviously, you keep on pushing. But that's the plan, to educate people here and to get the bill in there ASAP.
All right, thanks for that. Let me pass the mic over to Sonia.
Mm-hmm.
How can we help? What do you need?
You know, California, quote unquote, again, right, is supposedly a progressive state. And I say that even in the nooks and crannies of those areas, we are currently under siege when it even comes to the recall of our mayor. And so when we're talking about being the largest state in the union, the fifth largest economy in the world, what California does, the world will follow. And I literally believe that. And so with that kind of power and pressure, because I think that there's power, of course, that comes out of the dollar, but the pressure to put and make sure that those dollars are being resourced out to the community and the folks who are actually on the ground being impacted the most is where the ask is. So everyday folks, one, need to be registered to vote. Everyday folks need to not ignore the fact that we have an off-season election that's not a presidential election. We need to be extremely inspired to making sure that we are picking people on the local level that are cognizant of what's going on the ground. So your DA races, your sheriff races, your city council races, those are people really and truly who are going to impact your everyday life, more so, in my opinion, than that of the presidency. Those are those things. But when we're talking about just the sheer movement, we've gotten our bill through the Appropriations Committee, which is huge, right? So we've made some pathways in the right direction. Now what is the next step? And so that next step is continuing to put the pressure on those people who are our elected officials to make sure that their votes align with what the people are saying. Despite the fact that you have this fraction of folks who traditionally show up at the election time, hence we wouldn't have this recall effort, right? Because they're going to show up on the off-season election. They're going to dominate the numbers in the polls if the folks who call themselves progressive don't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we can't be inactive in this moment. Mm-hmm. We can no longer allow these moments that we think are the unimportant elections to be unimportant to us anymore. We just can't do that anymore.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Let me go back to Jamelia. Was there anything else that you wanted to add to your list there, Jamelia?
She may have had to step away.
Yeah, she might have had to step away.
So I was trying to get Alonzo to call in, you know, for the 10-2 campaign that's going on down in Louisiana.
Mm.
And I know he has been texting me the information. If you all can go to SaveTheKidsGroup.org. For those who are unaware, the 10-2 campaign is dealing with those who are still stuck in prison down in Louisiana under the Jim Crow laws that were established in 1898 with non-unanimous juries. People can be convicted on non-unanimous juries, and the Supreme Court basically said it was wrong, it violated your constitutional right, but I'm sorry, we can't do anything about it. The state has to change it. the state, the case went before the state, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said, no, sorry, the state doesn't want to do it. There's nothing we can do about it. So we have these living monuments living in the prison down in Louisiana, and they're basically stuck in prison for the rest of their life. So they're reaching out, asking for help. You can go to their website at SaveTheKidsGroup.org, and it's for their End the Two campaign. You can go to their site, see the information on there. If you're able to assist them in any way, that's how you can help them.
Thank you. Thank you indeed. I would like to offer some help, ask for some help too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as one of the leadership team for the Abolish Slavery National Network, I know there's one thing in particular that we need. We need money.
Absolutely.
Like, for real, for real. We're fighting against principalities and powers who have unlimited budgets. We ended slavery on a constitutional level in Utah for less than $800.
Mm-hmm.
We did it in Nebraska for under $30,000.
Yeah.
We ain't going to do it like that in California.
Right, right.
California,
right.
We don't need some money to do this here. And the same thing.
This broadcast is now being interrupted. We have Samuel Nathaniel Brown on the line.
Hey, Sam.
Hey, Sam.
Welcome to Abolition Today.
What's up, Brother Mac, Brother Youssef? Hey. How y'all doing?
We are great, man.
Great,
we're
brother.
Winding down. You know, for me, Abolition Today is the end of my week. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, after that, it's job well done. So, you know, we're wrapping it up right now. Like a nice big old bow. We done kicked ass. We took names. We inspired people. We moved people. And now, for me, it's time to wrap it up.
Absolutely.
You know? So welcome back, brother. You've been a part
you
of every part of that, you know?
It's an honor and a pleasure. I just want to say, even Hannibal and the Carthaginians and the Numidians and that army that he had, they had to rest too. So you
yes,
know,
sir.
Told me right.
So go ahead and add to the conversation.
Yeah, I would like to congratulate.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was just wanting to say, I wanted to congratulate y'all on a successful week. I was speaking to my wife about that from us passing through appropriations. The march yesterday, I mean, it's been really successful. There's a quote that I read that says, when your spirit is in the right place, the energy is there. And it appears that the energy is in ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
In ourselves. So we, our spirits are in the right place.
All right.
Word. Samuel Brown is co-author of ACA3. For those that don't know, he's also currently incarcerated in California prisons. And from inside there, he's doing more than many people who sit on their behinds on the outside are doing, for sure. You know, he's making history. He's making change.
Yeah.
And he's inspiring others to do better, to do more. So we appreciate that, fam. And you're constantly participating, even while the extorters are extorting you. You know, you'll be on a phone call with us talking to a senator, and in the middle of that, this phone call is being recorded. You are at your last 60 seconds. You owe us $39.95. Tell your mama we're coming to get our house. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy, bro. It's like
oh, yeah.
they sign
oh, yeah.
everything you're doing in that way.
100%. If they could actually put a, barcode on your thoughts, they would definitely do that. In fact, what my wife was sharing with me about Human 2.0, they're not far away from doing it. They're working on that too, putting barcodes on our brains, you know?
Well,
like
we're about...
That speech, that discussion. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're about 12 minutes from where we got to wrap it up. So I was saying, just letting you know that we only got a few minutes, and I want to give a shout-out to our sponsors before we go as well. So... Go ahead and finish what you were saying, and then we'll do a quick round robin.
Okay, that's the extent of it. The men in here, I always have to make it known that it's not just about me, but it's also about the men, and I'm sure the women also, but I'm in this institution, and I get a lot of positive feedback and gratitude from the people who support the work that we're doing, and they're very proud of us, and they're thankful for us, you know, having the courage and the wherewithal to carry this torch, especially during this day and age where a lot of people aren't seeing the significance in the work that we're doing. So I just want to end how I started and say I celebrate and appreciate you all for stepping up to be the modern-day abolitionists, because we are the change makers of our time. And it takes courage to do that. And I'm really proud of you all and happy to be here at this moment and recognize the sign.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Yeah. Right on cue.
Mm-hmm. The extortionist extorted.
Right on cue.
Word, brother. We are proud of you two and the accomplishments you have made. It takes a village. None of us are doing this alone.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't take everybody. You just have to have enough. And I think at this time, we're around that number.
Yeah.
Where we have enough to make the difference and push things over to the next level. So I do want to give everybody a chance to say just a little bit before we close it up, and I want to finish my ask as well before we ended it. So let me finish my ask, and then I'm going to pass it on to the next person. We need money, like for real, we need money. So go to the Abolish Slavery National Network's website at abolishslavery.us, and please make a donation. If we had a couple million dollars, we would kick so much ass like they stole somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know, right? So let's make it happen, okay? And also, if you appreciate what we're doing here with Abolition Today, you can always donate to the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center, because we do need resources as well. You know, these things don't happen on their own. We got to get out there and make them happen. All right, so normally I don't get out here and say give us money, but today I'm like, give us all the money, all of it. All right, with that, I'm going to pass it over to, let's go to Sonya.
Wonderful. As far as asks are concerned, I would say share. Have those conversations. Have those challenging conversations with those folks that you think might not be ready and they might get a little scared. It's okay. You know, providing that language, providing those talking points, providing those just touching those spots. I say that every family has a person who's been incarcerated,
mm-hmm.
a person who has been impacted by drug addiction, and a person who is suffering with mental health issues. We have to normalize these things. We have to get to a place where it's normal to have conversations about and figure out solutions to solve these problems. So ACA, ending slavery, ending volunteer servitude, all of those things are all tied into just normalizing what we now, you know, I call us aliens and the monsters, fighting the monster of white supremacy.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you being here physically. I'm like looking right into your smiling face right now. We appreciate that and bringing your spirit here with us on Abolition Today. All right, let's go to Dennis Febo. Dennis Febo, any parting comments, brother?
I just want to say peace and blessings to everyone. Make sure we stay with our eyes on the goal. We know that this is possible, and just looking at the other states that have done this and meeting these people and hanging out with these people and building, like, it didn't take anything special. It just took conviction. It took morality. It took, you know, wanting to do the right thing and fighting for what we know is supposed to be ours. So that's all we need to win, family. Ache.
Ache. Sister Jamelia Land.
I would like to respectfully turn over any time to Samuel.
Samuel Adams? Samuel Brown?
Yeah.
This is what I'm thinking, Samuel Adams. The live streamers know what I'm talking about. All right, Sam?
Oh, my goodness. But thank you very much. I do want to follow up on what you said. We definitely need money for this battle. I remember one of my mentors told me, she said, black people specifically always have these great ideas, and they come up with these organizations to fight, but they fall short on the economics.
Mm-hmm. This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Hey, extort some more money.
Hey, securing the funds, we need to bring about the change. So that is very crucial, and I'm glad you made that ad. And I really appreciate you all for keeping someone like me alive in this and keeping my name a part of this. And just following up on what Dennis said, yes, we got to be mindful that the finish line is the goal line, and we're not there until we're there, y'all. So we just got to keep pressing forward, enjoy our victories, but expect tough challenges also, and count them as a blessing because we're going to push right through them. So I just want to
thank you,
Sam. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamelia. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah.
All right, Sean Darling, real quick, anything?
Sure. I just want to say real quick, it's been an honor to be a part of this movement and to learn every week from Evolution Today. And I'm glad that we're doing this coast to coast from me into California and everyone in between. And we will get this done very soon. I'll get everyone's together.
All right. Thank you so much, brother. And I'm about to drop another earthquake on Julie.
Julie.
Any final comments for this evening?
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you for letting me be here. This has been a real honor. Mm-hmm. And it's something resonated with me, this idea of the dialogue.
Yeah.
So when you talk about the abolitionist movement, and we've talked about it a lot, this shit. Sorry.
Talk about the shit.
All the shit. All the shit. There's a lot of it going on.
Right.
You know, this idea of, and I want to take it just a little bit further from, I'm your person you're talking to.
Yeah.
I am one of the people.
Right.
And so it's humanizing this stuff. When you talk about your son,
yeah,
that is compelling stuff.
Absolutely.
What it does is it takes him from prisoner,
mm-hmm,
right,
from convict,
right,
to human being that we really need to tend to.
Absolutely.
And I think just from, again, from the end user standpoint, for want of a better description,
mm-hmm,
that to get those stories out would give you a tremendous edge with people.
Yeah.
Just the personal stories.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Did I miss anybody? Anybody want to make any final comments? All right. With that being said, I'm just going to say thank you so much. You could have been anywhere, but you're here with us. We really appreciate it. It's been a hell of a week, and I'm about to hang up my shoes for a minute there and rest my feet for a few days. That's my plan.
And crab cakes.
I got to see my mama. I'm going to have crab cakes. I'm hanging out with my brothers over here who I ain't seen in a decade.
Right.
Brother Yusef is here with us live and in person. We're going to enjoy a couple of days. I'm going to pass the mic over to Brother Yusef, and we'll see you next week. But don't forget, September 19th, our guest will be the Queen Mother of Benin, Africa.
Yes.
The Queen of Benin is September 19th.
Wow.
So tune in then.
Okay.
Brother Yusef.
Thank you all for being here this evening. We'd like to thank our sponsors and our Dreams and the Black Talk Radio Network. My ask is for you to remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/abolitiontoday. Also follow us on Facebook at Abolition Today. We're working on other pages as well. For all the news, information, and the music you hear on the program, Abolition Today is available on all podcast networks and is simulcast on the Black Talk Radio Network. Also to remember to join the movement at abolishslavery.us, text 52886, text the word end the exception, is one word, to 52886. If I can recall the other one, just give me 1 second to pull it up. I did take the notes on it. Hopefully I get it right. End slavery in California.org and ACA3.com/ms@gmail.com. Make sure you hit up all of those sites. Doesn't matter where you are in the country, hit those sites up. And also, don't forget the Shut Them Down 2021 movement. We haven't forgotten that we're still in Black August. So we're getting into our Bridging the Gap segment. This week, we have Ozzie Davis reading Frederick Douglass, Birth of the North Star. Mm. And it's followed by Freedom from Django Unchained.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we'll be back Sunday, September 5th, God willing, broadcasting back from our home bases.
Abolition. Abolition.
To my friends in England, I owe my freedom in the United States. They learned through correspondence that Captain Auld, my master, would take £150 sterling for me, and this sum they promptly raised and paid for my liberation, placing the papers of my manumission into my hands before they would tolerate the idea of my return to my native land. To this commercial transaction, to this blood money, I owe my immunity from the operation of the fugitive slave law. Having remained abroad for nearly 2 years and being about to return to America, not as I left it, a slave, but a free man, prominent friends of the cause of emancipation in England offered to make me a testimonial, both on the grounds of personal regard to me and also to the cause to which they were so ardently devoted. I suggested that my friends should simply give me the means of obtaining a printing press and materials to enable me to start a paper advocating the interest of my enslaved and oppressed people. I told them that perhaps the greatest hindrance to the adoption of abolition principles by the people of the United States was the low estimate everywhere in that country placed upon the Negro as a man, that because of his assumed natural inferiority, people reconciled themselves to his enslavement and oppression as being inevitable, if not desirable. The grand thing to be done, therefore, was to change this estimation by disproving his inferiority and demonstrating his capacity for a more exalted civilization than slavery and prejudice had assigned him. In my judgment, a newspaper in the hands of persons of the despised race would, by calling out and making them acquainted with their own latent powers, by enkindling their hope of a future and developing their moral force, prove a most powerful means of removing prejudice and awakening an interest in them. These views I laid before my friends. The result was that nearly $2,500 was speedily raised toward my establishing such a paper as I had indicated. On December 3rd, 1847, I launched my own newspaper, The North Star, in Rochester, New York. I chose this name because a slave followed the North Star when he escaped north to freedom. On the masthead, I inscribed as the paper's motto the words, "Right is of no sex, truth is of no color, God is the father of us all, and we are all brethren." In a message to my oppressed countrymen, I wrote, "We solemnly dedicate the North Star to the cause of our long oppressed and plundered fellow countrymen. May God bless the undertaking to your good. It shall fearlessly assert your rights, faithfully proclaim your wrongs, and earnestly demand for you instant and even-handed justice. Giving no quarter to slavery in the South, it will hold no truce with oppressors in the North, while it shall boldly advocate emancipation for our enslaved brethren, it shall omit no opportunity to gain for the nominally free complete enfranchisement. Every effort to injure or degrade you or your cause, originating wheresoever or with whomsoever, shall find in it a constant, unswerving, and inflexible foe. Remember that we are one, that our cause is one, and that we must help each other if we would succeed. We have drunk to the dregs the bitter cup of slavery. We have worn the heavy yoke. We have sighed beneath our bonds and writhed beneath the bloody lash. Cruel mementos of our oneness are indelibly marked on our living flesh. We are one with you under the ban of prejudice and proscription, one with you under the slander of inferiority, one with you in social and political disfranchisement. What you suffer, we suffer. What you endure, we endure. We are indissolubly united and must fall or flourish together." I had resolved that whatever power I had should be devoted to the freeing of my people from slavery, and that once free, they should enjoy all the rights, privileges, and immunities enjoyed by any other members of American society. To the achievement of these goals, I dedicated the rest of my life.
Felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders.
peace and the fear that the truth I discover. No telling how all this will work out, but I've come too far to go back now. I am looking for freedom.
Abolition. Today. Abolition. Today.